This is Pure Decking for Thursday, September the 12th, 2013. This is the show about stuff that interests me, you know, like descending into a police state, InfoSec, and the Illuminati. I'm Morps, and tonight we've got Madman, Sard, and Suave, and apparently a reading deficiency. So, I'm hitting the scotch.
That's just the booze, dude.
I'm hitting the scotch. What do you got, what you got there, Sard?
Beer. Shock top.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Yeah. Suave, what do you got? I know you ran to the liquor store like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I went and picked up another case of that Ephemere apple beer that I had picked up when you guys were doing that last Let's Get Drunk show. And I've kind of fallen in love with it. It is just awesome.
Nice. What do you got, Madman?
Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy. I couldn't find the Shock Top Shandy anymore, so I decided to give this a shot.
Nice. So, well, for kind of our station news and our discussion is going to get kind of rolled into one here. Just in case anybody wasn't paying attention today, the Galaxy 15 site got popped, and the hack itself wasn't actually all that bad. But it was bad enough that Google blacklisted us for, what, 16 hours, give or take? Something like that. It's clean now. I've already cleaned it all up. In fact, I had it all cleaned up within, half an hour of me waking up and figuring out shit was going down. And I guess the short of it is we had an FTP account that got compromised. It was for one of the guys who was helping us put together the site. Back when we first got started, actually, one of the artists. And as best we can figure, what happened was he gave his FTP, he gave his old computer that had the FTP account saved in it to family. And he didn't clean it. He just kind of, you know, repurposed it. And it was later infected with spyware. And I talked to him this morning just to give him the heads up that you need to check your accounts. And, I'm not wanting to say who it is because it is, you'd probably be able to figure it out if you know the group, but I don't want to go into whose account got popped, that kind of a thing, you know? But, we come to figure out that his old computer that he gave to family had gotten infected with spyware and, was quote unquote cleaned. So it probably never, it probably got out that way. And that would certainly match the logs, because the FTP log didn't show anything that looked like a brute force attack from the IP. It was like they logged in, they knew the password, they were logged in for about a minute and a half, and, they did their damage. Now, this is actually not the first time the site got popped. It got popped, last week? But at the time, I didn't realize it was an FTP attack. I had assumed it was a WordPress attack, which is a dumb assumption. You should never assume anything with an attack, right? So I actually made a series of mistakes here, and I'm perfectly willing to own up to my mistakes. So I made a series of mistakes with administering the website. Well, first and foremost was I assumed what was going on was some sort of a WordPress code injection style of attack, right? Somebody was hitting something on the website. And then the reason I assumed that's what it was is because that's what the results of the attack looked like. The header files of our themes on the website were getting modified to inject JavaScript to put in pop-ups and try to pull down malware. And the first one didn't actually work. It put a little bit of garbage in the header, but their JavaScript was over-obfuscated. It didn't work. So I that looked like a code injection from somebody doing a, you know, something through like a bad WordPress program or something, right? So I spent hours scanning the site, going through the web server logs, you know, checking the OWASP stuff, trying to figure out which plugin is it? How did they get in, right? Well, it wasn't anything on the web server. It wasn't WordPress. And when I couldn't find anything, I was thinking, well, maybe somebody got into the server, because we have yet to move the site over to our new server, and it's still on shared hosting, which has always been a bit of a hang-up for me. I don't like that. But it actually was just a good old-fashioned somebody knew the FTP account, and the way our host does FTP, all FTP users all show up as kind of an FTP user account, so it wouldn't be immediately obvious that, you know, one of these accounts had been modifying files. And so going through, and I finally, you know, decided to check the FTP account, just trying to see when the last time stuff was modified. And, you know, that's when I see it, and it's just like, oh, crap. See, because I had made that assumption that it had to be a web attack. Surely nobody got one of my FTP passwords, because, I mean, these things are crazy. If somebody managed to get one of those, I mean, holy crap, right? But, right. No, I mean, it's like, wow, somebody got 56-character pass. Damn. No.
Well, it is FTP, happened. Dude, so it's still sent clear text. But
it is, but I almost never FTP. I always SFTP in. I use SSH to get into the damn thing.
Right.
Usually through certificates most of the time these days. I mean, it has a password just in case I'm ever on a different box. But like I said, it's wacky. Anyways, so like I said, I had assumed that it was a WordPress problem. And we actually have a couple of WordPress security plugins. And I had turned them off when we were redesigning the site several months ago, and they kind of never got turned back on. And that's a classic mistake, and that's a mistake on my part. You know, we turned them off to redo the theme because, well, when we were configuring the theme and updating the page, people's IPs kept getting IP blocked for like 10 minutes because the site thought it was under attack. And it never got turned back on, and that's one of my mistakes. So, you know, I re-enabled the security stuff. I verified permissions on everything. I went through the weblog up, down, left, and right, trying to figure out how the hell they had, you know, injected code into my site, right? And, you know, the first one didn't actually work. So I had assumed their injection didn't actually work correctly. Like, you know, something got re-encoded somewhere along the lines and it broke their JavaScript. And, No, it was all just FTP, and which is kind of nice that I was able to use the FTP log as a guide to what all got changed, and that the account that was compromised has been killed. All passwords have been changed, and we even changed the database password, and I've actually removed several accounts from the Galaxy 15 site, except for pretty much the two main maintainers. If other people need accounts again, we can re-add them. But just as a short-term fix, we were pretty much clearing out anything and everything that possibly could have been compromised.
Which makes sense. Kind of, you know, in firefight mode, lock that shit down right now.
Pretty much, because the big thing that scared me more than them getting in and modifying files was they pulled down the WP config, which means they had the database password for, you know, four some odd hours, however long it was, before I got up and saw what was going on and took care of it. Now, I didn't find any indication that they had accessed the database for whatever that's worth. But, you know, so I don't know if they got in the database before I changed the password or not, but they didn't add anything to it. They may have pulled it down, though. So, you know, there weren't a lot of accounts, and I've pretty much given everyone the heads up that if you use that password anywhere else, you kind of want to change it, like, now. Because they possibly could have gotten the database. I can't say definitively that they didn't, although it looks like they didn't. But, you know, luckily I had that log of everything else they did, so cleanup wasn't actually all that bad.
Well, that's cool. Like I said, it's just kind of funny that, like I said, it's such a basic protocol.
I'm embarrassed.
You were thinking it was something,
you know,
much
I'm
more...
always,
Well, it's like
I'm flat out embarrassed.
Well, yeah, but it's not like your fault. You know, this is just, you know, somebody lost their password. You know, like somebody got somebody's password.
That's why you format your computer before you give it to someone.
Yeah, exactly. And that was
not only that, but this would have all been mitigated by the occasional password reset.
And having some other securities turned on, but I don't know. Oh, yeah. Like I said, dude, it's a hobby site. It's not a big deal. It's just funny because, like I said, it's such a basic protocol. But it's like, you know, when you're in college and you're used to doing calculus and differential equations and all that, and then you go back and try to do like simple algebra, and you're like, wait, but this is this can be so much more complicated. It can't possibly be this easy. So yeah. It happens.
But the sucky part was that Google flagged us, and up until a couple hours ago, we were, of course, blocked. All the browsers, you know, block you with the malware lists. And I understand why people get really bent out of shape about that, but at the same time, I kind of like the automatic blocking of malware just for all the headaches that it stops. I would have appreciated an email, since I actually have a Google Webmaster Tools account set up, mostly for analytics. I would have loved to have gotten an email saying, hey, we blocked your site for malware, as opposed to, you know, trying to go check something. Actually, you know what I was trying to do? I realized I had forgotten to post the last Let's Get Drunk, so I was going to take care of that real quick, and so I just grabbed my tablet to go make the post, and look at that. Your site is, you know, blocked, and there's, you know, no message, no email. Son of a bitch.
That's kind of lame that they didn't give you any notification or, like, hey.
Well, there was a notification in the account, but it wasn't an email. Like, I had to go log into the Webmaster Tools account and get the message from there.
Oh, okay.
And I think I got into it just as they had flagged it, because it didn't show up as flagged right away in the Webmaster Tools. I had to bounce the screens a couple of times before it came up. Because as I logged into it, it didn't say, you know, malware. I think I got it just as it was flagged. But
that's a hell of a thing to wake up to in the morning.
Well, like I said, I got it cleaned up and then was dealing with messages all day long. It's like, hey, up with the site, man. What's going on?
It's
already fixed. I'm just waiting on the flags to go away. So, I'm always the one going on about security, and I do the Digital Dojo section on this show. I do this damn show, and my site gets fucking popped, and it's just like, really? Fuck. And such a dumb pop, too. Somebody just got a password.
It
happens.
Yeah. I guess live and learn type thing. You mentioned last week the same thing happened. I didn't know that. When you mentioned it happened before, I was thinking it was like years ago.
No. Pretty much the same style of attack happened, and it was... they went and injected code into the headers, just like they did this time. And because I thought it was something on the website, I went through and updated all the plugins and locked everything down and rechecked the permissions. But all I did was go in and clean out the non-functional JavaScript, right? Because all it was doing was putting a little bit of garbage pretty much right under the logo on the web page.
Okay.
And
I saw that the other day. You could see it on the main page?
Yeah, it was just right there on the main page.
Okay. I saw that the other day, and I was going to say something, but I was like, oh, no, Morphs is probably working on the website and just forgot to close the tag somewhere.
No, it wasn't. Well, I got it cleaned up real quick, too. So it's just like, oh, well, shit, somebody injected code on our site, and, you know, I thought it was a WordPress thing. You know what I mean? I mean, that's always been my big concern, is we're running WordPress and WordPress plugins, and, you know, they're so... fragile sometimes. You know, they just recently patched a remote code execution in WordPress like yesterday, so I made that assumption, and that was a dumb assumption. So but it did get me thinking about incident response a little bit, which is something I do at work. So, you know, it's not like I don't know how to do it. It was just damn it, I have to do it on my site, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, of course, try not to make assumptions. If I hadn't assumed that it was a web-based attack and had just looked at the damned FTP logs, I could have nipped this in the bud back when the attack wasn't severe and before Google blocked us.
Yeah, well, like I said, dude, I've had the same thing happen at work. You spend hours and hours troubleshooting one thing, and you just
gotta look over
stop
there.
And you realize, oh, the freaking NIC is unplugged. There's no link light. Let me go wiggle the cable. Oh, look, it has a link light now. Oh, and everything works. That's great.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens.
So, of course, your logs. Have your logs shipped somewhere else on a regular basis. That way, if they modify them in one place, they might not get modified in the second place.
Or delete them, yeah.
You know, or just flat out deleted, you're right. Yep. And, read the damned things. your system's trying to tell you things. You might want to take a look at them. So, and make
FTP
sure that...
FTP's annoying, though, as far as reading logs, because I've looked extensively on something that will parse FTP logs and put them into an easy, nice format, and I have yet to find anything that will do that.
Oh, you'll like Digital Dojo, then.
Excellent.
I was going to save this Digital Dojo until we got the website moved, because it is something I've been intending to set up for quite a long time. It's just not something I can set up on the current host.
Okay.
So, I was holding off, but we're going to talk about this evening. So it's called OSSEC. It's a host-based intrusion detection system, and its big claim to fame is it does log file analysis and alerting.
Cool.
So it does a lot of things, but make sure logging is turned on. A lot of times they turn logging, especially sysadmins, once they get the system working, they'll turn logging off just because they're afraid their hard disk will fill up, or they think it puts a drag on the system. I'm having an interesting argument with some Exchange admins over that very subject right now. I understand why they don't want to turn on some of the logs I've requested, for as busy as those servers are. But,
But they're as busy as they are. That's the exact same argument to turn logging on.
Isn't it? So it's interesting going back and forth with the argument, because they make some good points about, it's like, look, if we turn on all the logs you're requesting, the box will fall over because it can't write to disk that fast. So, I mean, it's it's interesting going back and forth. But, so once you figured out what's going on, assess the damage, figure out how they got in, which in this case was FTP. Figure out what they altered. Well, I've got that nice little FTP log file showing me all the header files is what they altered and what files they downloaded. And then figure out what they could access. Well, in this case, that particular FTP account was locked purely to the Galaxy 15 WordPress folder. It couldn't go anywhere else. So it couldn't get to any of the archives. It couldn't get to the MP3 files. It couldn't get to any of my other sites. The only thing it could do was screw around with the G15 account. So, now this did have the nasty side effect of, like, all of Lore's stuff was flagged as well, because it was on the same domain name.
Right.
Like, even his Tumblr and everything else, because, everyone who linked to Galaxy 15 was getting flagged as well. Yeah, no, wow. Google goes nuts when they decide to account as malware. So, and then the other thing is, once you know what they could access, what can that access lead to? For example, I know, because it's in the log, they pulled down the wp-config. But that means they could get in my database. I don't think they did, but they could have. And that immediately meant change that password, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like MySQL or Postgres or something on the back end.
MySQL, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, there's logs to that. Those should be looked at as well.
Yeah, I did, and like I said, I didn't see any access in there that looked like it was anything but from our web server. But,
right.
Like I said, you never know.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, just in case.
So, once you've done all that, of course, one big thing, close the hole. Figure out, once you figured out how they've gotten in, fix it. In my case, it was a bum FTP account, so we deleted the account. And, if we need to make a new one, we'll look at it, but...
It's kind of funny that this happened today, and it was an old, stale account, because I just did that at work today. I ran a report on a ton of servers, probably a couple hundred servers, looking to see what local accounts... they're all Windows servers. Yeah. See what local Windows accounts are there. And some of these servers haven't been touched. You know, it's a pretty app. You know, you stand it up and you don't have to touch it for months. You know, and some of the stuff I found, there's some admin accounts out there from a guy that had been fired for, well, he wasn't fired, he left, but over a year ago.
Yeah,
I found a local account that was on there, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, it's very important to prune and those old accounts.
It can be really hard to audit all these systems, especially if you've got systems administered by different departments and you're not sure who owns what. Oh, it can be a nightmare managing that. So you know, once you fix the hole, you know, in our case, we deleted the FTP account, and if we need to make a new one, we'll look at it. But you know, reset passwords. You know, just assume they're popped. Go on the assumption. Anything you can't prove they didn't access, assume they got into it.
Yep.
And take appropriate steps. Then, of course, you know, fix your files and you know, try to get Google to de-blacklist you and you know, double check everything. Scan everything. Make no assumptions. That's actually kind of funny with all the NSA crap going on. You kind of have to assume at this point that they've got all of your stuff, and so you kind of have to plan appropriately now. Like you can't say with definitive certainty that you know this file only exists in X, Y, and Z locations. Well, it could also exist in a couple of NSA locations. So, of course, you know, I guess I that one may not count in your business reports because they could just take down, you know, kick down the door, hand you the warrant, and take it anyways. So I'm not sure, but
you can shred a lot of paperwork in the time it takes them to hand you that warrant.
That's true. That's true.
How was the appealing process?
Oh, it wasn't bad at all.
It wasn't? The reason why I ask is because we had a mail server get blacklisted from a bunch of different big websites.
Spam. That's a completely different...
Yeah, mail spam, but still, I was just thinking of what I had to do to get that mail server once we fixed... It was a user account. Their password had gotten out, and people were relaying mail to one of our mail servers with their account, but it was a pain in the ass, and it took at least 2 weeks, probably, for us to get off all of the blacklist.
Well, we only got picked up by the Google blacklist, and I got it fixed so fast that I doubt any of the other scanners would have picked it up. I think we just, you know, we lucked out that Google picked that time to audit the website, you know?
Right.
And I almost wondered if it was somebody trying to do it, some kind of an oddball DDoS where they purposely infect your site with malware, then go report it to be scanned. Like, that'd be kind of a complicated way to do it, but at the same time, talk about trashing a site's reputation.
Right.
I never did post Let's Get Drunk because it'll send out tweets and other notifications that there's been a new post on the site, and I didn't want to direct people to the site with a big old malware warning popping up.
Good point. Yep.
So, you know, I'm kind of glad that's all cleared up, and we'll, of course, get shows all caught up on the posts tomorrow, but, yeah, I mean... You know, that can really kill a site if you're first-time visitors. Like, you know, we just handed out all those cards at Gen Con, right? And I'm sure people are still, you know, now that con season's winding down, because you had Dragon Con and other stuff like that, who are starting to go through all their stuff. And it's like, huh, I wonder what this is. Let's go check that. Oh, malware. Never mind. You know, and that's the end of it, right?
Yeah, let's hope not. Hope that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Come back, all of you. Come back.
Although, when I was, you know, hitting all the scanners, I did, like, I found somebody had done some kind of a audit on the site. I guess it was one of those domain evaluation things, like trying to put a dollar value on the domain account.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a site with unique multimedia content or something like that. It's like, all right.
How much are we worth?
It's like nothing.
Oh. It's gotta be worth at least a couple million by now.
Couple hundred bucks is what they had listed out. But I liked the whole unique content. It's like, oh, that's one word for it. So anyways, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much you guys saw what was going on and what wasn't, because I got it cleaned up fairly quick. But
Yeah,
I mean, by the time Google had us blocked all day.
Yeah, that, I was just going to say, that's by the time I had talked to you, you already handled it, and just waiting for Google to unblock it.
So, but yeah, there was a post made in the subreddit and screenshots floating around. It's like, oh yeah, no, we're seeing something. So it's just like, oh man.
Oh really? Well, I know I hopped in IRC, and I think Juver was mentioning it. I said, yeah, you know, we know about it. It's being handled. I hadn't even thought about looking at the subreddit.
Oh yeah, no, there's a thread in there, and
I imagine
I made a couple of posts to it, and it's just like, yeah, because Lore was complaining that all his stuff was getting the block to it, and it's like, yeah, I'm sure anything with the G15 link on it is.
Right.
So it sucks. You know what I mean? It's like, damn it, they got into my site.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I'd done a fairly good job on that too. It's like, oh damn it. I mean, I mean, everything's got holes in it, so it shouldn't be that surprising that something happened. But I mean, although we've almost hit 3 years. It'll be 3 years since I registered the domain later this month. And this is the first time that's happened. That's not terrible.
Yeah. Well, so.
I mean, I don't think it was a targeted thing. It was like one of those automated insert ads.
Oh yeah, dude. I definitely think that's. I mean, because all they want to do is add more bots to their botnet.
Right. Because when I went to the page anyways to click past the Google warning, I was on my Linux box, so it's like, yeah, sure, go whatever. What the hell, right? And I did figure out how to go in there and delist Wine so that Windows stuff wouldn't just automatically run. And it came up, and I was getting pop-ups for Adult Friend Finder on the site. So it's like, what the fuck? I need to send these assholes a bill. Advertise on our site like that. We don't take any advertisers. What the hell is this?
Actually, one thing you could have done is get that referral link and report it, because they'll lose all funds that they've earned on that account.
Oh, I was more worried about getting it cleaned up as quickly as possible. Yeah, I didn't even save the attack code. I probably should have.
As a 13-year-old script kitty, I did some spamming and definitely got all of my money taken away because somebody reported that shit with good reason. It was something that needed to be done.
I see now that you were waiting till after the meetup to inform us of this. I don't understand why. It could have been the large stick we were walking around with.
I like my kneecaps. I do not wish for them to be broken.
I wouldn't have broken your kneecaps. That would have involved a physical altercation. You have brake lines.
Yeah, but he had a rented car, and, you know, no. You see, if you're going to do it, you got to remember, Suave's like us. He makes his living on the computer. So the kneecaps, he can deal with. He can work from a wheelchair. No, it's the fingers.
Not my mouse-clicking finger.
That's the moneymakers.
So... Ah, that was horribly dark, wasn't it? Wow. All right, let's go ahead and get into news stories here. I got several. Internet news here. First one up is from the AndroidPolice.com, or I think it's just AndroidPolice.com. A very serious security hole has been discovered in Firefox for Android that allows a website to force the browser to download and run potentially damaging files without the user's knowledge or interaction. The vulnerability was first described and demonstrated publicly on September the 9th as part of a posting meant to advertise the attack as being for sale. Whoops. The method for exploiting the weakness simply requires a web server to instruct Firefox or Android to initiate a download, after which the download file is automatically opened or executed, depending on the file type. Mozilla's browser, like many others, allows the server to begin sending a file without first prompting the user. Unlike other browsers, Firefox or Android automatically attempts to open the file based on associations registered in the system, similar to the way desktop systems open a file when it's double-clicked. The real danger here is that the user is never prompted before the file is opened. To fall victim to the attack, the person would merely need to be using Firefox or Android and visit a malicious site, or one that has been compromised, like Galaxy 15 Radio was. Given the popularity of hacking heavily trafficked sites, like apparently imui.us was hacked a couple of weeks ago, this would be an easy method for infecting quite a few devices, especially if done very subtly. Unfortunately, there is no clear way to disable this behavior in Firefox or Android. Due to the simplicity of exploiting the weakness and its potential for serious damage, we strongly recommend against using Firefox or Android until it's fixed.
Yeah, so, that's a pretty freaking huge hole right there.
Well Mac had this problem for a long time, too, and actually on Windows, Firefox had the problem for a little while, where it would automatically run stuff after it was downloaded, especially if you'd ever clicked open with instead of download. And I know on a Mac, like Safari had this problem where it would automatically try to open files for you. I guess it, you know, just being helpful. But if you hit the wrong page and it starts downloading a file and opens it, then, you know, you may not know what you're getting. So this is not a new problem. It's just on a new platform.
Right. I don't know why they would think that's a good idea in any platform, though.
Because every website can be trusted.
Right.
I mean, nobody does anything malicious on the internet. That guy that was hacking your site just wanted to give everyone free donuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Free donuts.
Sure. Why not? And porn, actually. It was Adult Friend Fighter, so, you know, porn. But, yeah, you're right. I should have saved that stuff so we can send them a bill.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you got advertising on our website without... So our advertising rates are $1 million per pop-up, and...
And I know for certain of six, because that's how many I hit whenever I was trying to disable this crap.
So, yeah, you can pay that, or we'll, you know, of course, be hiring a lawyer. And yeah, I don't think that would actually get all that far. They just claim they weren't responsible, and that'd be the end of it, but still. So, next one up, this one's from Torrent Freak, and I just included it because I think it's fun. The Pirate Bay is one of the few torrent sites that doesn't link to any infringing material on its homepage, but that doesn't prevent copyright holders from targeting it. In one of its most recent DMCA notices, music industry group BPI asked Google to remove the Pirate Bay's homepage from its search results, marking it as infringing. Google disagreed, however, and refused to comply with the request. In an effort to make piracy less visible, copyright holders are sending dozens of millions of takedown notices to Google every month. Music industry group BPI is one of the most active senders. Over the past year, they've asked Google to remove more than 30 million URLs, and the search engine complied in nearly every instance. Last week, however, Google refused to take down one link in a DMCA notice containing more than 2,000 allegedly infringing URLs. The link in question points to the homepage of the most notorious file-sharing site on the internet, the Pirate Bay. While the Pirate Bay is often targeted, it's a rather odd request. It's no secret that the Pirate Bay links to hundreds of thousands of infringing titles across the site, but the homepage is not one of them. The BPI notice, however, claims that the PirateBay.sx infringes on the rights of the music.
The music?
The music.
What? Not the music industry or a particular band.
No, just the music.
The concept of music in general is infringed upon.
Apparently. Huh. Apparently BPI owns the concept of music. I know lots of people who might disagree with them. I'd like to cite prior art, but just as a thought there. Where was I? Google agrees that the Pirate Bay homepage is harmless, and the search engine has refused to comply with BPI's request. As can be seen below, they've got screenshots on the... on the Torrent Freak. The PirateBay.sx is the only URL in the entire notice for which no action was taken. This is not the first time that the Pirate Bay's homepage has been targeted by rights holders. 4 years ago, Google briefly removed it from its search results after it received a takedown request from Remove Your Content. The company in question later denied that it sent the notice, and the link was quickly reinstated. At the time, Remove Your Content claimed that an impersonator must have sent the DMCA... somebody else did that, certainly. Is almost certainly not the case with BPI's recent notice. Over the past few months, there has been an increase in DMCA notices asking Google to remove homepages of pirate sites. The MPAA in particular is targeting a lot of streaming portals using this method. Google doesn't appear to see these requests as legitimate, as it refuses to comply with many of them. In BPI's case, it's not known whether the Pirate Bay's homepage was intentionally targeted or if, yet again, the mistake was a product of automated takedowns. So, I kind of like that somebody at Google is at least looking before they take the link down.
Yeah, exactly. Finally doing less evil or do no harm or whatever their logo lingo thing was.
Well, it also means that somebody building some kind of an automated system and figuring out the format isn't just going to spam their system and get all kinds of crap removed. Somebody's actually looking before they delete something.
Right.
How much do you think they actually look at, though?
Oh, I'm sure it's just spot checking, but I mean, at least somebody looked at like your URL and said, wait a minute, that's just to the homepage here, and there's not really usually much on their homepage, an image and a search box, and that's about it.
Right. So, well, the other thing I wanted to bring up is it said, you know, how Pirate Bay links to torrents and stuff like that. Whatever happened to the whole argument of we don't actually host any copyright infringing data, all we have is links, you know, that we're actually hosting
now.
Linking counts
they
just
now.
Changed it and so
yeah just you know linking counts. You can't link to infringing content. That's just as bad as hosting it yourself, apparently. You know, the way the internet works is contrary to their business model, so you know, fuck you. That's pretty much how that works.
Yeah, exactly, because they aren't even, I mean, it's just retarded because they aren't hosting it at all. It's going out usually out to Tor. And Tor is peer-to-peer, so they aren't hosting it at all.
Oh, these people are idiots. What are you going to do? I mean, they don't understand how this shit works.
Yeah.
They just go for the target.
Yeah.
And it's not even like some intern sitting at a desk picking websites or anything like that. It's just some bot that they've got set up to set all this stuff up. Like, it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, it's really funny. One of the reasons the Pirate Bay maintains their letters list is they're not in the United States. So they're technically not, you know, they're not subject to the DMCA. They're subject to whatever their local law is.
Right.
So they get DMCA takedowns all the time, and they'll send them notes saying, yeah, we're not based in the States. Your law doesn't apply. And some of the replies they get are really funny.
Yeah. That's right.
Like lawyers don't understand the concept of American law versus international law.
Yeah, jurisdiction and all that. It's been a long time. They have that linked on there somewhere, right?
I'm sure it's still there.
The Pirate Bay hate letters or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are always entertaining.
Legal notices and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
They could just update the bots they're using to send those letters. Start citing treaties instead of the DMCA. At least it'd be less funny.
So, all right, let's do the next story. It's kind of a no-duh, but what the hell. This one is from Ars Technica. The security of Oracle's Java software framework installed on some 3 billion devices worldwide is taking a turn for the worse, thanks to an uptick in attacks targeting vulnerabilities that will never be patched and increasingly sophisticated exploits, security researchers said. The most visible signs of deterioration is the in-the-wild attacks exploiting unpatched vulnerabilities in Java version 6. Christopher Budd, threat communications manager at antivirus provider Trend Micro, wrote in a blog post published Tuesday. The version, which Oracle stopped shipping in February, is still used by about half of the Java user base, he said. Malware developers have responded by reverse engineering security patches issued for Java 7 and using the insight to craft exploits for the older version. Because Java 6 is no longer supported, these same flaws will never be fixed. So,
nice.
Pretty much, because Oracle quit supporting something that half their user base is still using, it's like, this is why every time Microsoft says we're going to end support for Windows XP, it gets extended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because so much of their user base is still using it to do so is just suicide.
Yeah, I mean, just because you say it's not supported anymore doesn't mean that everyone's going to upgrade.
I mean, Microsoft has still been pushing like mad trying to get people off XP.
I'm still wondering if that's ever going to happen because there's still a shit ton of people out there.
There's still machines running, you know, NT4. I mean, it's going away.
Right. And in that case, I mean, they're essentially saying, okay, we aren't going to support this anymore, and we're going to force you to try and spend money and buy a new license and upgrade your OS. Most people are just going to give them the finger or pirate it, you know? Give them the finger and pirate it. Why are you going to force me to pay money to you to use my personal computer? So,
So anyways, finishing the story out here. This is a large pool of vulnerable users who will never be protected with security fixes, and so they're viable targets for attack, Bud said. He went on to cite the recent building of the Java exploit.abc Trojan in the Neutrino exploit kit, a software tool available on the internet that streamlines the development of exploits. Java exploit.abc exploits the CVE 2013-2463 vulnerability that Oracle fixed in Java 7 2 months ago. You know, I hate to point it out, at work we're still shipping, or we still tell everyone to stick to Java 6 because a lot of our applications don't work in Java 7. We're waiting on vendors to update.
Right.
Now, and that's not entirely the vendor's fault, because Oracle pushed 7 and then dropped support for 6 fairly quick.
Well, so, yeah, that, and why didn't they build backwards compatibility into 7? Like, oh, you guys can't use this anymore, so we're going to break all of your stuff, but you still should upgrade, even though you can't use your stuff anymore. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't know that that's exactly what happened, because a lot of these applications, they're not all the... You know, there's some of the writing in them is not all that great. Like, they're looking for Java 6.
Yeah, they're coded in Java. Here's your first clue.
You know, I don't have a problem with most Java apps, but they have to be maintained and they have to be better written than most of them are. Like, I remember when I was working at a car part manufacturer to deal with Chrysler. We had to have machines with Java 1.4.14, I think is what it was, installed, because their little web application didn't work with anything else. They had actually coded in the version number. And
nice.
So, you know, you ended up with like 3 or 4 different versions of Java installed to deal with all the different vendors, and it was just a joke.
Right.
So... let's see, the other dynamic causing the decline in Java security is the increase in the ever more sophisticated exploits that target a much lower level of the Oracle software platform known as the Java Native Layer. Trend Micro researchers described the maturing of this technique in a blog post a couple of weeks ago. Bud recommends people make it a priority to upgrade or update to version 7, an undertaking that will be painful for businesses with custom-written apps that work on only the older versions of Java. Those who can't update should still take steps to mitigate the damage that can be done. He also draws parallel to the retirement of Windows XP that Microsoft has scheduled for April. Yeah, good luck with that. I guarantee it's going to get extended again. I mean, I almost guarantee it.
I don't see how it can't. I mean, I've seen lots of polls and stuff like that. Like, I've seen some on Tech Republic, and it's still like, you know, 50% of businesses or people that at least that they're polling out there running XP.
Yeah, I mean, with Windows 8 out, it's probably getting closer to 40, but still, I mean, it's you know, it's not going away. Not anywhere as fast as Microsoft wants, anyways.
Right. From the corporate standpoint, once you say you're not going to support it, I'd say keep supporting it, just start charging for the support.
Well, that's what they're actually going to do. That Microsoft has said, if you want a support contract, you can purchase one, and they threw out some ridiculous price.
Right, but...
$3,000 a patch or some bullshit like that.
Oh, so they are actually pushing out, push out patches for that? I wasn't sure, like, I've heard people, you know,
They're going to make patches. They're not going to push them out unless you paid for them.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, they'll just kill the Windows Update servers, and if you want the patch, you can buy it. That kind of thing.
Okay.
So Rofaxon sent me this next story. Actually, I took the story he sent me and combined it with another one to kind of get all the details in. It's from sanfrancisco.cbslocal.com. State officials could set up a pilot program to test digital license plates under a bill advancing through the legislature. California may become the first state to pursue digital license plates that could be registered electronically and record tolls. Privacy advocates are concerned the plates could become tracking devices for law enforcement. Instead of a metal license plate, the digital plate would be a computer screen, slightly larger than an iPad. Registering the plates could be done wirelessly. Supporters of the measure said the digital plate could look similar to the current plate, but it would also be able to register fast-track tolls and display amber alerts to other drivers. That concept right there of...
So yeah. Let me get this straight. They actually want to replace a metal plate with a digital screen?
Yeah, they want to basically replace your license plate with a fucking iPad.
Wow.
That's going to cause all kinds of problems. One, I can see people spoofing those so that they're not paying their own FastPass tickets.
I immediately am just thinking payday. This is a great getaway scheme. Oh.
I'm automatically thinking, oh, great, someone's going to hack into one of these things, and their license plate is going to be dicks.
It gets better. let me keep going.
I hope they're wireless.
They are. It gets better. Supporters of the measure said the digital plate would look similar to the current... Oh, wait, I've read that already. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, a San Francisco-based digital piracy group, opposes the idea, saying it doesn't protect a driver's location and personal information. Law enforcement needs a warrant to be able to put a tracking device on your car. It's a possibility that the way this program could be implemented, these smart plates could be that tracking device, said staff attorney Nate Corzado. A lobbyist for the smart plate said the program is geared towards big companies with large vehicle fleets and not the average driver, but the measure doesn't specify. It's like, yeah, no, this is for trucks. Totally just for trucks. Yeah, you won't be affected. Oh, look at that. The assembly approved SB 806 by Democratic Senator Ben Huso of San Diego, which would authorize the Department of Motor Vehicles to evaluate alternative license plates and registration cards. A legislative analysis of the bill said replacing current plates and registration cards with wireless devices could reduce the processing and mailing costs. Privacy advocates have raised concerns that digital plates could allow government officials to track motorists. Blah, 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 blah. It could be approved by Jerry Brown. It's going on to the next House. It's going to the Assembly Tuesday. Oh, wait. It cleared the Assembly Tuesday, and it returns to the Senate for a final vote on... Well, it doesn't say when. It just says it's going back to the Senate now. But, yeah, I cut out the part of the story. But, yeah, these things are wireless. Like, you know, one, to work with that fast track program, they'd have to be. But also, two, they can be updated remotely. I cut it out of the story, but they were talking about how, you know, there's traffic and long lines at the DMV, so now you just do it online.
Wow.
That says to me cell phone network. So... But also, too, that law enforcement would be able to, instead of trying to read your plate and run it, they could just, you know, boom, hit it and, ID it, right? So that to me says cell networks. Like, you know, they'd have a little, the little GSM modem in them, right?
Right.
So what if you got one of those same jammers that was knocking out the stock exchange and GPS and just kept it in your car?
Yeah.
Would the
never
plate still
to update?
Yeah, what would happen with your plate? I mean, you'd never get charged tolls. You couldn't, they'd have a hell of a time pulling you over. I'm with you guys. I think somebody's going to hack these things and start, putting porn on them or something.
You know, honestly, if they implement something like this, I hope somebody comes up with something akin to the Pirate Box. That's this nice little battery-operated, self-contained device that you can just leave on street corners. And it just automatically hacks these things as people drive by. So you just have dicks driving all over town.
Literally. Well, I'm just saying, they said they could issue amber alerts on the things, so they have to be, like cell phone or somehow, right? So I'm just wondering if they'd be dumb enough to say, oh, well, we'll just use a text message, for the amber alert. The moment somebody figures out that number.
Oh, yeah.
Warning zombies ahead much? I mean...
Oh, wow.
Warning zombies ahead. Pizza Hut's giving away free food.
I'm sorry, officer. I was distracted by your by your license plate. That's why I plowed over the little kid.
Everyone becomes an ambulance.
Oh, you know what? I just thought of you could play a badass game of like a tag with your cars. You have to get so close to it, and then like someone's license plate turns red, and then they're it, and then everyone drives away. That would be fun as hell.
Oh, man.
All fun and games until somebody rams into a fucking divider.
when Rofaxon sent me the link, he was like, do you think these things could be hacked? So to answer Rofaxon's question, yes.
Not only do I think they can be hacked, within the first week, people will be playing Pac-Man on other people's license plates.
Oh, while sitting at red lights.
Pong between two cars.
Just watching movies. What are you doing watching Tron? I mean,
Ooh, think of the DMCA complaint for a license plate. This device was illegally streaming the Muppets.
I like the pirate box idea though.
I do too. And you know, once you get some time to play with one of these things and figure it out, I'm sure the thing's got a JTAG interface on it somewhere, right? So you can dump the firmware out and figure out what the hell it is you're playing with. I mean, that's just, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's see, where am I? Next story up, this one's from ZDNet. Dell will go private for $24.9 billion following a shareholder vote in favor of the deal. I can't read. In favor of the deal on Thursday. The final deal is pegged at $13.75 a share and includes a 13-cent share dividend. At $13.88 per share, that amounts to $24.9 billion. The deal also means that when the company announces its next earning report in November, shareholders will receive an 8 cents per share quarterly dividend. Overall, the price is a premium on the $24.4 billion or $13.65 per share that was first proposed in February. Details of the vote have not been announced and they will update the price when they have more. In prepared remarks, the company founder and chief executive Michael Dell said he was pleased and energized to continue building the PC maker. As a private enterprise with a strong private equity partner, we will serve our customers with a single-minded purpose and drive the innovations that will help them achieve their goals. Now, the reason I'm covering this, I'm going to stop reading there because it just goes on and on about Dell. Dell makes a fairly high percentage of the computers that are out there today.
They're all garbage.
Actually, I found with Dell lines, it's every other line. Like, the first run of a line is usually good, and then, like, the next year's run is crap.
Right.
I don't know what's going on in their factories, but they go back and forth. So, because I've got some Dell machines that have been kicking for 10 years, and I got others that, you know, fell over after two.
Right.
So, I mean, Dell's hit and miss, but they're going private. So I find that interesting. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing.
Right. Well, what's interesting is it's Michael Dell buying his company back again and going private. So that means, like, they were private before, they went IPO, became a publicly traded company, probably had a board of directors, and now he wants to buy it back and wants to be the CEO head honcho again, do it all his way.
It's not but just him, though. Right? He said he had an equity partner into it.
That's true.
A group of people decided to simplify their accounting. Because to be a publicly traded company, it costs you like an extra $3 million a year just for compliance with taxes. So they're cutting that out, and if they put out like a super good product, public will no longer be able to profit from Dell. Big upside to public corporations was if a corporation was actually well-run and doing something good, the entire world could share in the wealth that it was generating. Now, if Dell just becomes super kick-ass and super profitable, only the people that have already bought into it can profit from it. No one else can ever get into it.
Okay.
Huh. So, I do kind of wonder, where I was going to take the conversation on this was, I kind of wonder what the hell it is Michael Dell wants to do that he doesn't think he can get past a shareholder board.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking too. Like, is he just going to go in there and clean house or something?
It very well could be exactly what Madman says. He's wanting to simplify his tax and accounting bills.
Yeah.
Well, with him having an equity partner into it, I'm thinking a lot of the shareholders. Well, you know how shares generally work.
Are you asking me? Yes, I know.
Well, there are multiple types of shares. Not all shares are voting shares, and generally with public companies, what they're selling is just a share that's saying, I'll give you so much money now, you're going to give me so much of your profit later. So most of the people holding shares in Dell probably didn't have voting rights to begin with. They were just profiting from Dell if they were doing a good job.
No, but they would still have a board meeting and stockholders. I mean, that they would be, they would have to answer to.
Yeah, they answered to the stockholders that had voting shares.
Right, and I'm sure there were, like I said, I wonder if there was something they couldn't get past those that group of people that they're wanting to do as a private company or not. I don't know. It could very well just be they're simplifying the books, like you say.
I'm thinking with that low of a price, anyone that was going to be a problem with running a business they bought out prior.
It could be. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was interesting that Dell's going back to private. So, all right, next one up is from Ars Technica. Julian McMillan wants nothing to do with Yelp. He runs a small law firm in San Diego, California, focusing on bankruptcy law. And yet his business, like many others, has had an entry on the review site. On Tuesday, McMillan was served with a lawsuit from Yelp, alleging breach of contract, international interference with contract, and unfair competition. Oh, and false advertising. In short, McMillan is being sued over supposed false Yelp reviews posted from 2010 to 2012. The lawsuit was filed in late August of 2013. It has no merit, he told Ars. I assure you I've never asked anyone to do that. So just to clarify, what's happening here is this guy has specifically said, and they get into it later in the article, that he has asked Yelp to remove his profile. He's like, I don't want a profile on your site. But Yelp refuses to remove it, and now they're suing him for breach of contract.
He didn't put he didn't put it up, right?
Yeah.
So Yelp's suing him for something he has nothing to do with on their own site.
Yeah, pretty much.
We need to put something about Microsoft on Galaxy 15 so that you can sue them and I can be rich.
It's not a bad idea. Let's see how this case with Yelp goes here. Anyway, so it goes on. The article goes on here. Let's see. Yelp would suddenly focus on a small target when presumably fake Yelp reviews are happening on a daily basis across the site. Well, in fact, this is the second such case involving Yelp suing a business over supposed fake reviews. Curiously, Yelp's lawsuit against McMillan was filed just days before a San Diego Superior Court judge was supposed to rule on Yelp's appeal of a small claims case that McMillan filed against Yelp. So they're countersuing him. The initial small claims judge likened Yelp's practices to the mafia, a fact that highlighted in a local news segment on the story. And as a result of the initial ruling, McMillan is now soliciting others in similar circumstances. On August 26th of 2013, the appellate judge dismissed the case and mandated that the parties seek binding attribution, or arbitration, I'm sorry, seek binding arbitration. So apparently Yelp has an arbitration clause in their site user agreement, which this guy never agreed to, but the judge said, nope, you got to go to binding arbitration. It's just like, I guess they've just, steamrolled this guy into their contract and now they're suing him for breach of contract.
Wow.
I'm still trying to figure out how that works. We continue taking aggressive stance against business owners who are attempting to mislead consumers through fake reviews. Christian Weinzard, a Yelp spokesperson, told Ars, noting that the company has previously sued by YelpReview.com. This is the second complaint we have filed against a business related to deceptive reviews, she said. Weisend add that Yelp's lawsuit against McMillan was completely separate from the small claims court case that he has been that has been ongoing for months. So, for years, Yelp has been publicly accused of extortion, asking for money for businesses that are automatically listed on the site, whether they wish to be or not, in exchange for preferred placement on the site. There are also accusations of abruptly vanishing positive reviews and suddenly appearing negative reviews. McMillan hired Yelp to provide advertising. Oh, so he did agree to a contract. McMillan hired Yelp to provide advertising services in 2012 after receiving a cold call from an ad sales representative. I agreed to pay them just so they wouldn't start posting negative reviews on my Yelp page, he said. McMillan claimed to hear previous allegations as to what he called Yelp's extortion tactics. After getting into a dispute as to what services would be provided, McMillan simply asked to be removed from the site. The response came back that they deem it important for people to find me on Yelp, he told Ars. So why do they get to make that decision? If I don't want my company on a billboard, I don't put it on a billboard. He said he can opt out of the phone book. The company feels they have a right to use my trademark trade name on their website, and then they hide behind the Communications Decency Act when it comes to businesses that complain about false reviews on their pages. Yelp says its policy is not to remove business listings. So, oh, what a mess.
Was this contract with them up?
I don't know if he ever actually signed one, because apparently he got a cold call from them and was going to agree to advertise with them, and then didn't like what they were doing, so he canceled it.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of convoluted at this point, but the story certainly makes it sound like Yelp is just harassing this guy, and so when he sued them, they just sued him right back for breach of contract. Which I kind of wonder on that one. You know, it's like if I suddenly said Microsoft were in a contract, could I sue them? Like you said, I mean, because apparently Yelp can.
If this actually gets held up, we need a P.O. box in California, and I want to be rich by the end of the year. I think we can pull it off.
All right, well, you can follow that lawsuit, because I don't actually know how to do that.
Not a problem.
No.
It's like, did you all get all your paperwork from LegalZoom.com? No, sir, we got it from the Pirate Bay.
Like, we weren't going to pay the LegalZoom. Pirate Bay had that shit up.
Yeah.
So, ignoring Yelp's business practices, because I'm not up on exactly what they're doing, but you know, really, these types of review sites are great, and you shouldn't be able to remove your name on it or anything like that if you're getting. And the only reason you'd want to remove your name is if you're getting bad reviews. And yeah, sure, every once in a while you're going to run into somebody who didn't like your service or just had a bone to pick with you or something like that and leaves a horrible review. I read an article just the other day where somebody sued someone because they left a review on their on one of these sites saying they found bed bugs in this hotel, which they're saying, oh no, there's no bed bugs here, and they lost a bunch of businesses because of it. But it's overall, it's a good thing. Like, you know, a great example is like ratemydentist.com or something like that. And you know, like you go in, you go find your reviews and ratings and everything like that. It helps you find a very valuable service. And if somebody's a fucking douche, it's going to be very apparent. And it's going to help you find a better service. And if you can go in and just have your listing removed, it's going to completely defeat the entire purpose of these types of sites.
Build of the site. If it's a site charging the people who you're listing, then yeah, they should be able to have their stuff removed. But if it's customers paying to get access to a list, like I want to see a list of carpenters in my area, if I'm paying for access to the site, then the carpenter shouldn't be able to get it removed. But if the carpenters are paying for a service as an advertisement, if it's not working, or if they're getting more negatives than positives, they're paying for the site. They're the customer. They should be able to have their stuff removed.
If they're paying for it, absolutely. But, you know, in my experience, most of these services, nobody's getting charged anything for access. It's just all advertisement-based.
Well, according to this one, Yelp's the one getting paid for it. So at that point, this guy should be able to have his stuff removed.
There's a lot of scuttlebutt that goes back around about Yelp. That apparently what they will do, because I think we covered the other story about buying Yelp reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What about internet, you know, bullying on all that? What if it's blackmail or extortion, you know?
Well, that's the thing. Yelp has been accused of that before, that they'll call up a company and say, you know, we're Yelp and we're offering to sell you preferential treatment on the site. And if the company refuses, suddenly their Yelp rating goes to shit and all kinds of fake negative reviews show up.
Right.
And Yelp has been accused of that before.
I believe there's actually already laws against this sort of practice, isn't there? It's just a matter of proving
it's called blackmail.
Yeah, exactly.
Slander or libel. I think it's libel if it's written.
So, you know, if there's already laws against this, I don't feel like any action should be taken. It's just this is a really sketchy business practice that they're doing. But I don't think that you should be able to, you know, just sue somebody for to remove your service.
No, there's still their right site. Free speech.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sounds to me like this guy's getting harassed by Yelp. And because he, you know, didn't want to play ball with them, they put up all these negative reviews and he says it's hurting his business. So, I mean, you know, of course, the negative reviews could be real. You don't know.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the real reason I'm interested in this, because that makes me wonder if you can trust Yelp or not.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it to me, that's for sure.
So.
Well, it's not the first time I've heard negative things about Yelp. So I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
What, that one restaurant we went to at the meetup that first night apparently had great Yelp reviews.
Yeah, we all heard about that.
To be fair, they only had two reviews, both of which were good. So it was the owner and the owner's cousin.
So, all right, next story up is for Suave specifically. It's from the blogs.smithsonianmag.com. If you're an active Redditor, you might spend time lamenting the fact that some of your most clever, insightful comments get so few upvotes, and some of the lamest comments of other users sometimes seems arbitrarily rise to the top. As it turns out, a trio of researchers, Lev Munich of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, Sinan Aral of MIT, and Sean J. Taylor of NYU, recently decided to apply one of the basic tools of science to investigate this phenomenon, the randomized controlled experiment. And by teaming with a social news site to randomly vote on thousands of comments and closely track how they did afterwards, the researchers proved that the very first vote a particular item receives, and not just its intrinsic merit, has an outcome or outsized influence on its overall fate. So I want to know how the fuck these guys are writing up their research proposals that they're getting grants to sit there and read Reddit all day.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, how the hell did they get money to do this stupid shit?
So, their new study, published today in Science, relied upon a research they did between December 2010 and May of 2011. In the paper, they said that it was conducted on a social news aggregation website similar to Dig.com and Reddit.com. But they don't disclose which particular site it was, because they say the site's administrators are nervous about the risk to user privacy. Nevertheless, they describe a bunch of features, such as the ability to submit links, make comments, vote up or down each post and comment, and a front page populated by the most popular posts that are core parts of Reddit, and they even use screenshots of Reddit to illustrate them.
Definitely not Reddit.
Suffice to say, if they didn't do the experiment using Reddit, they did so with an extremely similar site. During that 5-month window, they analyzed 101,281 comments on the site, all posted by normal, unwitting users as part of the experiment. The comments were randomly assigned into one of three different groups. Those that would receive the positive treatment, automatically getting one upvote right after being posted, the negative treatment, automatically getting one downvote instead, or the control, simply being passed along with no artificial vote. The vast majority of the comments, 95,290, were simply passed on as part of the control group. Users of the site interacted with these comments with no outside influence from the researchers. The researchers then split the remaining comments between the positive and negative at roughly the same ratio that upvotes and downloads occur naturally on the site. 4,049 comments got the positive treatment, receiving an automatic upvote that had nothing to do with their content, while 1,942 comments got an arbitrary downvote instead. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Pretty much they figure out that first vote matters. If something gets an upvote right away, it's going to work up. If something gets a downvote right away, sometimes it'll just, disappear. Sometimes you'll have people like trying to upvote it to correct the bad downvote. But apparently that first vote makes all the difference, is what they figured out.
Yeah, I think they, I read this article earlier, and I think it's a 25% increase overall for the initial upvote on average.
Yeah. So when you're writing your bot to send your spam links to Reddit, you want to make sure you have a couple of other accounts to automatically upvote it?
That's not going to work, because Reddit, these websites, not necessarily Reddit, have anti-spam bot monitoring. So if they see a pattern where like one bot submits something and then another bot upvotes it, that'll automatically get tagged as spam, and you're not going to have a lot of luck. So it's you'd have to come up with some sort of algorithm or something to kind of get past that.
So I'm sure some arbitrary number of accounts you could make it work.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, all right, let's do the last story we got for tonight. This is from ParentHerald.com. By studying how memories are made, UC Irvine neurobiologists created new specific memories by direct manipulation of the brain, which could prove key to understanding and potentially resolving learning aid and memory disorders. Researchers led by senior author Norman M. Weisenberger, a research professor of neurobiology and behavior at UC Irvine, and colleagues have shown that specific memories can be made by directly altering brain cells in the cerebral cortex, which produces the predicted specific memory. Researchers say that this is the first evidence that memories can be created by direct cortical manipulation. Study results appeared in the August 29th issue of Neuroscience. During the research, Weisenberger and colleagues played a specific tone to test rodents and then stimulated the nucleobulbosis deep within the brain, releasing, how do you say that, acetylcholine? Acetylcholine, a chemical involved in memory formation. This procedure increased the number of brain cells responding to the specific tone. The following days, scientists played many sounds to the animals and found that their respiration spiked when they recognized a particular tone, showing that specific memory content was created by the brain changes directly induced during the experiment. Creative memories have the same features as natural memories, including long-term retention. So they're researching this for learning disabilities, but they've essentially figured out what chemical to inject in a rat's brain when they're playing a tone to make sure it's going to remember it.
That's cool. That's fucking awesome. In the realm of nootropics, this is like the holy grail. Can you imagine, like, if you could just pop a pill, read a book, and remember everything in that book? That's
This is less pop a pill and more jam a couple inch long needle into your skull, but
well,
same
you
concept.
Know, give it time. We'll wait for Gen 2 or 3, but it's still like once they've locked down what they need to do to make sure that a memory is retained.
What about that thing where you hook a battery up to your head? Does that actually?
Teach your experiment and no.
No, they've actually done studies with the electronic stimulation and have shown that it's increased your ability with math, I believe. It requires certain voltages at certain amperages in certain locations. But yeah, you can essentially just hook up a couple of electrodes to your skull and increase your learning potential. But of course, you have to know the right spot and the right voltages and all this other sort of stuff. But it's there. I don't recommend this for home use, by the way.
I was about to throw that in there. You're about to turn a bunch of people retarded there.
Yeah, go on. Just shove your finger in an electrical socket while reading your chemistry textbook. Report back to us. Tell us how it worked out.
I was thinking that thing that shocks your abs just taped all around your temples.
Why not?
It probably works as well, right?
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
A little bit of trial and error. These spots cause epileptic seizures. These spots help you remember things.
Why do I smell burnt toast?
All the time now.
You know, I am totally acing my calculus exams, but I'm getting these random seizures. I'm not sure why.
School is going to be so much easier now. Why does school smell like burned toast all the time?
Wow, and we lost the host.
Yeah. Bye, Warps.
I think he took our advice to heart and shoved his finger in his light socket. So, At least we're still recording, I think. There's yeah. That.
Broadcast.
But seriously, this is super awesome. Like, I've been following nootropics and stuff like that. And you know, sure, they're having to actually stick electrodes in, but I'm sure that there's ways to stimulate these parts of your brains without actually opening up your skull. And the guy who figures that out is going to be fucking making mint.
Well, this one, they've kind of done it. They're doing it with an injection. That could go into your tear duct.
Right, but are they? They're injecting it into your brain, aren't they?
Yes, it is.
So we gotta figure out how to deliver these drugs to the proper portion of the brain without sticking needles into your head.
I think it could just be dosages into the bloodstream, because it's going to work its way to the brain eventually.
Well, it depends on the drugs. A lot of drugs don't really do well passing the blood-brain barrier. And even if they do, they might not impact the proper area of the brain. So it's a really complex issue, and it's going to require a hell of a lot more study. But I say give these guys as much funding as they can possibly get, because this is just awesome.
So a neural shunt into the brain during school hours.
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
It's not like they could get a brain infection or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. You know what? I just thought of, if a brain shunt, you know, they're not just going to use that during school. They're going to use it all the time, and then, you know, the kids are going to start putting, like...
You can drop acid into your own brain.
Yeah, exactly. Acid directly into your brain. Or other awful, horrible things.
You'll remember the taste of the color purple for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
And, guess that's all, folks.
Well, you know, I've got the notes up. We could go on to the Digital Dojo, I guess. I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah,
hold on.
I was waiting
just,
for Morphs to
just,
tell me.
just
Google that shit really quick.
Yeah, but he usually actually plays with the stuff that he's sticking in Digital Dojo. I haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, I know.
Me either.
there's a thing that has something to do with security and is open source. It logs files, I think.
Yeah, it sorts the database out for you, so you don't have to go through all the logs. I'm not sure how well it works, because he was talking about it, but I never actually looked at it or played with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Awesome. I wonder what happened to him. Do you think he got hit by the feds? He's not even on Skype. I wonder if his computer, like, full-on, like, hard crashed.
I'm going to be back in a second. I'm grabbing my phone, and I'm going to actually call him.
Oh, there he is.
Nope, there he is. Welcome back. We've been stalling.
Katie, my entire USB bus just took a dump.
Awesome.
I don't know what you guys heard there before. I was like, hey, did I just crash? Boom, gone.
Nope, we heard nothing. You were just gone.
Yeah, we just had some awkward silences, and then we realized that you were gone, and then we just went on with the show.
We continued talking about the brain thing, and then we're deciding whether or not to go into Digital Dojo without you.
Well, that'd be funny, because I doubt any of you have played with OSSEC.
None of
us
have.
Talking about.
We're like, well, I think it logs stuff and works with databases and stuff. Something to do with security. I don't know.
Look, I haven't actually played with it, so...
to be fair, I haven't played with the modern version of it. I gotta get back into the freaking broadcast box so I can play the Digital Dojo notes. Oh, that was annoying. I installed Mate on my system, having every intention of next time KDE screwed up, I'd switch over to Mate. And KDE
seems
waits
like
it's time. But the problem is I don't have time to reconfigure Mate and get back in, so I was like, okay, get back into KDE, get going so I can get the back into the show here.
next time.
Oh fuck.
Yeah, that's about right. Okay. Actually, when I'm done with the show, I'm going to boot back into Mate and figure out what the... I'd love to know what just crashed out my USB bus. That was, you know, fantastic. Okay, let's do this. You all might not actually know this, that guy screaming, we stomped on Madman's foot at the meetup, and that's where we got that sound.
I knew it sounded familiar. But I imagined it was him twerking again. That's why I thought he was doing it.
I like how you put "again" in there. Well, part of that was RU's reaction to him twerking.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still think Big won the national twerking championships.
I'm pretty sure he's pro at that shit.
Yeah.
By the way, not enough mind bleach in the world.
I feel bad for Lore. I mean, he was just...
The G15 twerking competition. just picture that in your minds.
No, I really don't want to.
We'll bring you home the gold next year, don't worry.
So, for Digital Dojo, related to the website getting popped, I thought I'd talk about OSSEC, OSSEC.net. What OSSEC is, and I've got the slug from their website here, it's a scalable, multi-platform, open-source, host-based intrusion detection system. Powerful correlation log analysis engine. Okay, I'm going to quit reading this silliness. What it does is it reads in log files and applies rules to them. And it can generate alerts from conditions in the log files. Now, some of them are fairly obvious, like root just logged in from a service that root should never log in from, right? There's a web process running as root. It just got logged as root. Generate an alert. The admins might want to know about that. You know, a user account that should never, ever log in, just logged in. But the other thing it can do, and this is what I'm primarily interested in it for, is file integrity checking. Pretty much you can give it a list of files, and it will generate an alert for you when that file is changed. So, as a good example, the Galaxy 15 radio theme files, they shouldn't get changed that often. And when they do get changed, I'll probably know about it, right? So having the system generate an email whenever those files get changed would probably be a good idea. Because if I'm not doing it, I'd like to know about it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so the last time I really played with OSSEC was before Trend Micro bought them. But it's always been a really good host-based intrusion detector between the log files and the file integrity checking. It also says it does real-time alerting and rootkit detecting and a few other things. I think Trend Micro has been trying to expand it out into more of a full-on network sim, like you can run it as an agent and send alerts up to a network managed one. But pretty much the way it's supposed to work, if you're going to use it for a network, is you set it up on one box and set up syslog, and then just have it read syslog. It can also, you can actually have it log in to remote Unix-based systems or routers and stuff like that. You know, pretty much anything you can hit over SSH and pull in log files, and I think you can even check files. So in the show notes, I've got a YouTube video. It's a couple of years old, but it's a good overview of the system and how it works and what it does. I was planning initially on holding off on doing OSSEC until I was actually setting it up on the new server for the website. But I figured with today's events, it'd be a good time to cover it. So it's actually not a difficult system at all. It's you drop it in on a box, you set up what rules you care about, you give it the file list you want it to watch, and that's really pretty much it. I mean, it doesn't run a lot of processes as root or anything like that. It's you could almost get away with running it on a desktop system in the background. I think it's still something really you want to live on servers, especially servers that you're not going to interact with all the time. Sard, you were telling us about some servers at work that you're finding user accounts on that people haven't logged into for months.
Right.
Well, that might be normal. You know, it might be normal that nobody really logs into that box. So you could set up OSSEC on it and get an alert when somebody does. So, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Bill the admin from down the hall just logged into the box. You can walk in and say, hey, Bill, what's up? And, you know, talk to him about it. You know, figure out what he's doing and why he just got in that box. Or you see Bill the admin log into the box and you go down, hey, Bill, what's up? Why are you in that box? I'm not in that box. You know, ding, 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 ding. You've got something going on. So it's just a quicker way to figure out stuff's going on. It's just a way of watching, keeping an eye on systems, especially if they're systems that you're not going to interact with all that often.
Right. Reminds me of kind of like fail to ban.
It's got some properties that are similar to fail to ban.
Fail to ban also got some properties. SSH, right?
Fill demand could work on all kinds of services.
Oh, really? Okay.
You could use it. You could use it on Apache for trying to catch DDoSing.
Okay.
So, SSH was always a place you use it, but there were several versions of fail demand, or maybe several scripts just called that. I don't know. I've seen versions of it for all kinds of stuff, but it's got some of that. It's got some aspects of Tripwire in it. Trend Micro is supporting it, but it's still open source. It's still GPL code, so it's not like
I was just going to ask about that. I'm surprised as hell they bought something and aren't charging money for it.
Well, the original code was GPL'd, and I imagine if they tried to close it up, they'd have a hell of a time with it. It does look like they're trying to sell professional support for it, or at least the book of how to use it now.
Okay.
So, but pretty much I kind of want to point out it exists, and if you have the option of running it, I currently don't, but when we get moved over to the dedicated box, we will be running it. You should probably have something like this on your servers. It's just handy. If nothing else, just for having it alert on log files and collect them. So, anyways.
Handy tool.
Yeah, no, it's a very handy tool. And it's been something I've been intending to implement pretty much as soon as I can. And nothing else, too. You can drop it on all your boxes, get all your logs in one place. I mean, it's just syslog, but that's a nice front end on it. So, let's see. Promo time. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Big just added two new artists to the stream. I don't know if he's wanting to do a release party or not. We'll get with him on that. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. The Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. IHN on Saturdays, which has a better shot at being back this week than it did last week. So the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the Galaxy 15 Radio Sim on OS Grid, and the subreddit and the IRC channel. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
I just wanted to do a quick shout-out to Mation, Psychros, and Iron Angel. We've been chatting the whole time in the IRC channel while the show's been going on. So, what's going on, guys?
So, yeah, I need to get back in the IRC channel every once in a while. It's kind of creepy in there every once in a while, you know? Nobody's going to touch
that.
Part
of the point of IRC.
Nobody's going to touch that.
It's creepy text. It's cool. There's always people in there. I'm always in there.
So that's all I got. I thought I'd close it out with some classic Patient Zero here. And unless anybody else got his... Yeah, if anybody else has anything else, and imagine how empty that sentence would have been without the word else, I'm going to hit play on this music now. Fuck. Hurry down, I'll stop. Hurry down, I'll stop. yeah, we want that on a Windows AirBox now. Everything is fucked. Really, that's what I want on the Galaxy 15 site when we get malware again. Just, you know, the Google warning. Everything's fucked. I'm going to stop recording now.